fasten your seatbelt, and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we drop in on a relatively new institution in north central Wisconsin. It's called the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and it is housed on campus at UW-Marathon County. The Institute is going to be at the forefront of a contentious debate in the next several weeks, a debate over the thorny issue of immigration, as it hosts a series of town hall meetings on the subject at branch libraries across north central Wisconsin. The first of these meetings takes place this coming Monday at 5 p.m. in Edgar, followed by another meeting Tuesday evening in Athens, and then a series of more in the weeks ahead in Rothschild, Mosinee, Spencer, Hatley, Stratford, Marathon, and finally Wausau. The role of the Institute, strictly nonpartisan, providing a sounding board for the opinions of local citizens in north central Wisconsin. Joining us today, Eric Giordano, the Institute's director and an assistant professor of political science, and Jim Veninga, who's a member of the Institute Advisory Board and an associate professor of religious studies. Now, as always, we want you to join the conversation. If you want to find out more about the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, or if you want to get a jump start on those town hall meetings and voice an opinion on immigration, please give us a call at 261-6371. That's 261-6371. Or toll free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Jim and Eric, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Great to be here.
And let's get started with the obvious question. What is this new thing, this Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service?
Sure, Glenn. The Wisconsin Institute is the vision of a collection of, I would call, inspired citizens here in this area who thought that there was a need to fulfill part of the Wisconsin idea in bringing to bear the resources and expertise of the university and, on community problems, and especially to try to work with the community to identify what those issues are, and then try to engage the public in dialogue and scholarship to try to resolve or address those issues.
Why is it here in Wausau?
Well, I think it's because we have some great folks in Wausau who had the vision here and decided to put it here. So I think that I wish I could claim some credit to that, but I can't. I came on later. I think one of them is sitting right next to me, Jim Veninga, and others in the community. And so I think we're just really grateful that it is here.
Well, Jim, you were the dean while all of this was kind of shaking
that's
out.
That's true. And we've had faculty and staff who've been very much involved in this. We've really placed a lot of emphasis on civic engagement, on ensuring that our faculty and our resources here are extended out into the community. I think what we did over the course of a number of years got a lot of support at the UW. Certainly our chancellor is very much interested in what we're doing here. He's provided some financial support as we get this launched. We've also reached out to the community for support from foundations and other entities as a way of really launching the Institute and seeing if it can achieve its potential of being an important facilitator for public discussion on public issues. It'll be doing a lot more than that, and Eric is centrally involved in service learning and other programs that benefit the students here at UW-Marathon County. But part of that mission really has to do with finding ways of stimulating public dialogue, overcoming some of the kinds of conversations we have in which people are shouting at each other.
So, doesn't happen here.
Yeah.
No contentious debate, right?
Well,
we have contentious debate. We just don't shout at each other.
Yeah, that's right. A certain civility and a certain ability to listen to others and to see where people are on difficult issues.
So you see yourselves as facilitators. You're holding these town hall meetings on immigration, but you're not taking a policy position one way or the other.
Yeah, that's correct, Glenn. The whole idea is we want to hear what the public thinks about this issue. We want to understand how residents of Marathon County feel about the immigration issue, and we consider them to be experts to some extent given their own personal backgrounds, their political persuasions, and the idea is we want to engage citizens in a dialogue, have them talking with each other, and recording what comes out of those discussions.
Is anything like this happening anywhere else in Wisconsin right now? Did you model yourself after anything, or is this something
that's an interesting question, Glenn. We're partnering with the National Issues Forums, which is a national organization. And NIF works closely with the Kettering Foundation in Dayton, Ohio. And the Kettering Foundation has, as its sole purpose, strengthening American democracy. So between National Issues Forums and the Kettering Foundation, there are some 5,000 organizations across this country that use materials from the National Issues Forums, dealing with local issues and engaging in this kind of dialogue. But I must say that in Wisconsin, there have been some local efforts periodically and sporadically, but what we hope to do is to provide the mechanism for a sustained effort at involving the public in public issues and trying to ensure, as Eric says, that their voices can be heard.
So this isn't being done anywhere else in the UW system, for instance, or at any of our community colleges?
Not on a sustained basis. It's possible that there may be one or two people out there who have been trained in this model and who have used it from time to time, but we are going to become official partners with the Kettering Institute, and they have asked us to actually train moderators throughout the state for these types of public forums in the future.
It seems unusual that something like this would be happening on a two-year campus. You'd think it would be happening at UW-Madison or one of the higher-profile four-year schools.
I think we're uniquely positioned to do this. You take the 13 campuses of the UW colleges, we have very strong connections to local communities. I mean, county governments are involved in supporting us through facilities and operational costs related to those facilities. So we are connected to communities. So I think it really makes a lot of sense that this would indeed begin with the two-year campuses of the UW.
Now you mentioned the Kettering Foundation and the National
Issues Forums.
National Issues Forums. Do they supply you with material that you're going to use as sort of a template for conducting these meetings?
That's correct. They have booklets on these issues, including one on immigration called The New Challenges of American Immigration. We've made those available in the libraries where these programs are going to be held so that those who would like to read these booklets ahead of time can. But they don't have to read those books to participate in this discussion. We will provide some information at each of these town hall meetings about some broad choices having to do with immigration, that is kind of where things stand, mm-hmm. not necessarily particular proposals, but kind of the broad outline of different approaches to immigration.
Well, I'm going through this booklet for the first time. It's 32 pages, and it looks like it would be a great textbook for use in a high school or a college classroom.
It could be.
It tells you all about the history of immigration, the history of the laws, and some of the basis on both sides of the current debate over
that. That's right. And as you know, on some of these hot-button public issues, information is sometimes not really available. That is, the issue is discussed without some kind of background. But again, I want to emphasize that it's not necessary to read that 32-page booklet to participate in the dialogue, because we'll provide some information on kind of these approaches, and they'll have in front of them a kind of one-page summary of how we're going to talk about the issue.
I mean, the booklets are very well researched, but if you look through it, it really is designed to encourage discussion, and that's really what this is all about. Rather than people coming in and just simply debating, well, I'm on this side of the issue and I'm on that side, what we hope to do is say, let's put up on the wall, just metaphorically, let's put on the wall a couple of possible choices, what we could do with immigration. What are the pros and cons? What are the trade-offs? What are the positives? What are the negatives? So rather than debating each other, we're really trying to get people to discuss the issue in a civil way and find out, well, what do people think about this issue? So these booklets are designed to encourage that type of discussion.
Now, this is the first issue you're tackling. Why did you choose immigration?
Well, it's very much related to the theme that the campus here has for this year in terms of programming for students as well as the public, called Journeys to American Identities. So the immigration issue fit in very well with that overall theme. And it's not the only program that we're doing. For instance, next Wednesday, February the 6th, there will be a forum here at the university on becoming American. cultural challenges and adaptations for early German, Scandinavian, and Polish immigrants in Marathon County. And some of our former history teachers, Harlan Grindy and James Lawrence, will be participating with that in that program, along with a professor of history at Purdue University, and there'll be opportunities for the public to ask questions. So that's just an example of another program related to this whole series. But that's a different kind of program. In the one we're doing here on immigration is really designed to encourage public, thoughtful public discussion.
You're going to be recording the comments at these meetings?
Right. They're essentially, each discussion will have two, it's a moderating team that will be there. Jim or I will usually be out front sort of helping to guide the discussion, but then one of us will be also taking notes. And the notes are not just for us, they're also for the group itself that meets. So, for example, when we come to an issue over, you know, the costs of immigration, there might be views on both sides, and the recorder is supposed to note that down so that everyone can see what are the main trade-offs that we have been discussing that evening. And then we take those notes and we kind of put them together, and we hope to put together really a report on what these different groups have decided or concluded amongst that particular group about the immigration issue. And then we'll report that out to our local lawmakers and to the media and let people know what came out of these discussions.
And you are trying to reach as many people as possible. You've got one of these going on at every branch library in Marathon County. And then there'll be a report that will go out to the media and to lawmakers. And hopefully what? Will that spur some policy decisions down the road? Or?
Well, there's no guarantee that it will, but it certainly can't do any harm. And I think that the more we encourage these kinds of discussions, the more we take steps to involve citizens in public policy issues and provide that feedback to lawmakers and officials at all levels of government, the better off we'll be. Certainly that helps strengthen democracy.
When people, you know, social scientists have gone out and done some research in different communities around the country and also overseas, one of the things they consistently find is that people feel like they do not have a voice in their political situation, their economic situation, their social situation. This whole model is designed to provide a way to give people an opportunity to share their views about an important issue to them. And so we see it as our responsibility to help facilitate that discussion, but also report out what was discussed. And sure, we'd love it if the local lawmakers or state lawmakers or even national legislators would take a look at what people are saying about the issue. We can't guarantee that anything will change, and we don't know what will come out of those discussions. I mean, that's part of the beauty of the discussions, is that there's no end goal in mind other than to encourage healthy democratic discussion on an important issue.
It's a new organization on the UW Marathon County campus. It's called the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. We've got Eric Giordano and Jim Veninga with us, and in connection with that group, they'll be hosting a series of town hall meetings on the subject of immigration. The first one is this coming Monday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon in Edgar, followed by another one Tuesday evening in Athens, and then coming soon to a branch library near you. If you've got questions about this process, or if you've got any comments you'd like to make about the issue of immigration, some of the things that you think are salient points that need to be made in the current political atmosphere, some things that you might feel are being overlooked, things that you think Jim and Eric might want to focus on as they hold these meetings, we invite you to call us right now, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
Those phone numbers again, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. Our guest today, Eric Giordano and Jim Veninga of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, an organization that is going to be tackling the thorny issue of immigration in a series of town hall meetings beginning Monday in north central Wisconsin. How many people in north central Wisconsin in the area are involved in this right now? In the institute, in coming up with your general thrust in terms of what you're doing and what you're not doing?
Well, we can just start with our staff. We have two staff members, myself and a program associate, Gene Greenwood. We have two, soon to be three, interns, students that work closely with the Institute. And, of course, we have a very wonderful staff at the University of Wisconsin-Marathon County that have helped out. And we have an advisory board made of about eight members, including Dr. Veninga here, as well as the Lieutenant Governor and some other folks from our community that we're very happy to have. And I would say that in general, because the role of the Institute is to be a facilitator, we do draw upon the resources and expertise of our faculty here at UW-Marathon County and also at the UW Extension, and have been heavily involved with a variety of people in helping to organize programming, both currently and recently last fall and moving forward into next year as well.
Let me mention, Glenn, that I think that we've also drawn on the resources of the community in this. There's a program planning committee, which includes members of the faculty and staff, but it also includes members from the community. So we're really trying at this point to make sure that what we do, the kinds of programs that we select, are indeed of interest to this community and not just to the university. So a real effort is being made at going out, trying to find topics and themes and issues that we ought to be dealing with. And Eric has been out speaking before various community groups. I will say, too, that we also have gotten some wonderful help and assistance elsewhere. Campus Dean Sandy Smith has been a major supporter of the Institute even before she arrived here in Wausau and is very excited about this development. And Chancellor Wilson down in Madison also has lent his support and is very enthusiastic about what's happening here in Marathon County. We've had wonderful support from Marathon County itself. They have provided a temporary facility. They've been, I think, excited about the work we're doing and recognize the importance to local government of these efforts.
Let's go to the phones, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Ethel in Wausau, you're on Route 51. Hello, Ethel. Hello, Ethel, you're on Route 51.
Yeah, I'm here. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. As I was listening into the show, one of the things that kept kind of prompting me and coming up with the courage to call in was that one of the gentlemen had indicated that the 32-page brochure or literature that's available at the area libraries, that you didn't have to read it. Well, I want to bring your attention to that. I think historically that was one of the issues with the earlier immigration was a lack of communication. And I don't know if you'd like this idea or not, but what about partnering up with local literacy councils? And so the people that are of Spanish-speaking or Hmong-speaking or still having some kind of European influence in our central Wisconsin area, that we make sure that comprehension is looked at so people can have those vital conversations that you're hoping to have. I think that communication is very essential, and if they're not able to read it, that some kind of partnering up can happen so that everybody understands what's talked about.
Oh, I think that those are wonderful suggestions, without a doubt. My comment about not having to read the 32-page booklet.
Well, I know, it's time-consuming.
Well, I wasn't, you know, obviously we would love for everybody to read that 32-page booklet, but we also know that people are going to be coming to this event in the evening and after work, and they just may not have time. So I guess I just wanted to make sure that people knew they're welcomed, even if they couldn't read it.
Allow me to be that listener that just kind of pointed it out for the general audience who's listening in that, you know, I'm sure other people thought the same thing. What do you mean we don't have to read it? Is this kind of like, you know, it struck an idea too, like trust the situation, trust. And there's not a lot, there's trust rebuilding in America, but if we really thoroughly want to be educated to, you know, can meet up with the conversation.
Ethel, you bring up an important point. Involving the literacy councils and other groups, maybe we should be involving groups like Latinos Unidos.
Oh, we are.
Right.
We are.
This booklet is written in English.
Ethel, I just wanted to comment that one thing that we are planning on doing is we're going to be holding a similar dialogue in the Spanish language. Okay. And that will probably also be held in Wausau. And the booklet is in Spanish, and we are in the process of getting some copies of that as well.
And it'll also be translated into the Hmong language too?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think it is, but we have also discussed the possibility of holding a Hmong language forum and...
Or maybe have interpreters there.
That's right, probably having interpreters for that process. But that's a great suggestion. I'm really glad you brought it up.
There is a what is called the starter video that we'll be showing at these... town hall meetings. It's a 12-minute video which provides an overview of the issue. And that's also a way for, I think, those individuals who haven't had the opportunity to read the 32-page book to get connected to the issue in a very objective way.
Sure. Quick synopsis.
You know, and regarding reading and being educated generally on the topic, I mean, you know, the positives of this type of forum obviously are the dialogue that we hope to encourage. One of the perhaps downfalls or negatives is, well, this isn't really a traditional educational forum. I mean, we're not coming in there, providing some expert opinion and then debating the expert opinion. We're really asking residents of the county to come as they are, and share their views from their personal perspectives.
Sure.
However, we are going to try to provide a bibliography and encourage people, if they want to learn more, to go out and read some...
A reading list.
Right, a reading list, exactly,
sure.
If they would like to further that education.
And in fact, libraries, I think, have that list
that's
already.
Right, the libraries have
Ethel,
this list.
Thank you so much for the phone call. We've got to take a quick break for news here. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. We're talking to Eric Giordano and Jim Veninga of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, a series of forums on the thorny issue of immigration, starting this Monday at 5 o'clock in Edgar, the following day in Athens, and then coming soon to a branch library near you. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back after this. Back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. The subject today, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, a relatively new organization housed on the campus at UW-Marathon County. And they will be hosting a series of forums around Marathon County on the thorny issue of immigration. We have Eric Giordano, the Institute's director, also an assistant professor of political science, and Jim Veninga, who's a member of the Institute Advisory Board and an associate professor of religious studies. As always, we want to hear from you. Those phone numbers again, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. If you want to call in, if you've got an opinion about immigration or the process that they're going to be going through over the next several weeks, our lines are open right now. Ethel, who called in right before the break, made a good point, which is, the booklet, of course, is in English. This program is in English. How can you be sure that you're reaching a cross-section of people, even holding as many of these meetings as you are, and how can you be sure that the Hispanic population is adequately represented?
These are great questions, Glenn, and to be honest with you, it's some of the foundational questions that the Kettering Foundation and the National Issues Forum really is trying to investigate as well is how do you get a representative cross-section of communities out to dialogue and discuss issues of importance? And there's no silver bullet. There's no magic way to do this. And this is our first foray and our first attempt, and we're trying to do our best to, you know, spread the news about this and invite people from all walks of life and creeds and so forth. We hope that we get all different viewpoints represented. But then again, we have to expect that we're going to get people from certain communities, and certain communities may not be as diverse as other communities. And we're going to talk with the members of the community. So
I think, too, we can ask, you know, who's not represented at this meeting? Whose voice is not being heard here? And then even ask, now, what would they say if they were here? Just as a way of trying to broaden the debate.
How about the agricultural community? The whole topic of migrant workers, vitally important to, well, not just to agriculture, but they work in our meat packing plants, in our cheese plants, vital to the entire economy of north central Wisconsin.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it'll be very interesting to see if we get some representation from those business sectors and find out what are their views. Do they view migrant workers and immigrants as helpful to the economy, as helpful to broadening our societal views, or is this a drain on resources? These are some of the things that we hope to hear from different people.
You know, this is a contentious issue, and it comes up during particularly contentious times. Here it is in the wake of the September 11th attacks, the war on terror, problems with the economy, all these people who don't have health insurance, and then we've got this war going on in Iraq, and suddenly immigration surfaces as a major issue. Does the timing, as political scientists, does the timing surprise you?
Well, not really, and I'll tell you why. Because I think the issue of immigration is what we call a latent issue. It's an issue that people care deeply about on many sides of the issue, but it's something that really hadn't quite bubbled up to the surface. And I think that with some of the political discussion that has occurred in the last couple of years, and especially with the movement towards legislation to have immigration reform, also connected with the border issues and the potential for terrorists or others who would harm the United States to come through those borders, it really kind of bubbled up to the surface, and I think it was underneath there all the time. I think what did surprise a lot of people was the extent to which the Hispanic community in the United States, for example, really, I wouldn't say exactly spontaneously, but through text messaging, word of mouth, really rose up and had some tremendous outpouring through marching in different cities about this issue.
We had a huge series of demonstrations about a year ago, people waving Mexican flags, and there was a backlash after that, as there usually
Without
is. You know, it's physics. For every reaction or every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. It not only works with billiard balls, it works with people.
I think part of the problem here really is that we're still operating under, you know, legislation that was passed in 1965. And there have been a few bills that did succeed between 1965 and 2008 in terms of dealing with immigration policy. But there has been no sweeping overhaul. There has been no real reform legislation. And as Eric said, if this has been a latent problem, then all of a sudden it has really exploded. I guess one could say that we kind of lost track of what really was happening over a long period of time.
Is this a problem or an issue that Republicans care about more than Democrats?
Well, I think everybody cares about this issue. I think it's one of the reasons it's potentially so hot and contentious.
It sure comes up in Republican debates more than it's been coming up in the Democratic debates so far.
Yeah, it's definitely a hot-button issue for the Republicans. And I think part of it is because there's a sense that some people are feeling that there's already economic issues that Americans are dealing with, so that there's jobs that are going overseas, and yet we have potentially 12 million undocumented or illegal workers that could be taking jobs that perhaps or perhaps not some Americans would like to have. And I think people feel strongly about those issues. And I think the idea that people are coming across without going through the proper legal channels is something that upsets people. And I think the Republican Party, and especially the leaders, have really hit on this issue as something that's important to them.
On the other hand, Glenn, you know, your point about the relationship between immigration and the economy, there's a brand new book out by Richard Longworth called Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. And one of his points made is just how important that immigrant population is to the economy of the Midwest. And he actually sees it as a very positive force. So these issues are very complex, and our goal at these town hall meetings is simply to be facilitators in bringing out people's ideas and concerns.
And Jim, explain to me, just since you brought it up, the thesis of the book, how is it a positive force to have all of these migrant workers, undocumented workers?
Essentially working in certain sectors of the economy where Americans would not be working. And you mentioned some of the agricultural sectors and also meatpacking plants and so forth. So he says that in many communities throughout the Midwest, he talks a lot about Iowa, that those communities would be in really desperate shape if they did not have access to this workforce.
And how is that tied into globalism?
Well, I think one of the issues of globalism is we know that the business community, and I'm speaking about multinational corporations, and even smaller corporations have learned that they have to be flexible in this new world market, and they have to be willing to find, you know, cheap resources and cheap labor to stay in business and compete. And so the question really is how mobile is the labor market? And unfortunately, in America, our labor market is not very mobile. However, the labor market of other countries is.
I'm going to play for you right now a clip from a previous show that we did about a year ago on immigration. Got a call from the Reverend Scott Maurice Wheeler. He's a Presbyterian minister in Marshfield. He talks about the whole issue of the global economy and specifically free trade agreements like NAFTA, which he claims are the root of some of the problems that we're having.
This is Reverend Scott Maurice Wheeler. Our church has a Hispanic population in the congregation, blended into the congregation, and because of that, we took a trip to Tucson through a group called Border Links that does an border immersion experience with groups, college church groups, community groups that they would like. And the economic issue, and I heard it beginning to be addressed about moving from the United States if wages were $10 a day going to Canada for $100, and that seems to be lacking in the discussion and in the political debate. Instead of criminalizing the immigrants coming up from Mexico and other places and calling them illegals, they're really victims of our economic policies, which is interesting in Mexico that farmers from Canada and the United States can take their grain into Mexico, and because of subsidies in our country, undersell local markets and put farmers in Mexico out of business. And so in an attempt to try to find work for their families, they're forced to move further around and migrating. And, of course, where does that take them? Across our borders into our country, which, again, are almost poverty wages they're working for, and the concern about health insurance and things – they probably couldn't afford those in their own country anyhow. And until we begin to address the economic disparities and the consequences of NAFTA, which, as one person said, what we're seeing is NAFTA walking across our borders. And until we begin to do that, and here's a perfect example of ways that we can address the immigration issue is to connect families. But if we begin to open the borders in a way that recognizes more of an equity in farmers in Mexico receiving subsidies for their grain would probably prevent some of our ability to take our corn and dump it on their market at a cheaper rate.
That's Reverend Scott Maurice Wheeler calling in on an earlier show we did on the immigration issue, tying the entire situation to NAFTA, free trade agreements, and you know, Ross Perot warned about a giant sucking sound heading down to Mexico. Apparently, that sound is moving in both directions, or at least that's his contention.
Well, one of the choices that is included in this 32-page book, and one of the choices that we'll be talking about at these town hall forums, has to do with the necessity of really engaging in a dialogue with Mexico that would be productive. That is, that this is an international situation. This is going to call for a new level and a high level, really, of negotiations, and that the problem cannot be addressed simply unilaterally. And one of the approaches here pushes in that direction. At least that's one dimension of this.
Yeah. I first of all, I appreciate those comments. And I'm really curious, Glenn, to see whether some of the viewpoints that the Reverend mentioned will be reflected in the dialogues that we have. Because, you know, we're going out into communities in this county where potentially some people would see the value of migrant labor and immigrant labor, and potentially some would see it as a drain on the resources that we have. So, you know, it'll be interesting to kind of see where people are standing on this particular issue.
The argument has been made that these folks are taking jobs that Americans won't do. The argument could be made that Americans would do them if those jobs paid a decent salary and were accompanied by health benefits. The argument that these jobs below the minimum wage without health insurance are undermining the wages and benefits,
yes,
of Americans, and also that it's a threat to the union movement.
That's one of the very strong arguments that has been made and is being made, and I would be surprised if that's not articulated as well at these town hall meetings. The you know, and I guess one has to ask then some questions about, you know, factually, what can we say about that? You know, is there some research that we can point to that really deals with that kind of issue and question?
Those town hall meetings are starting next week on Monday at 5 o'clock at the Marathon County Library Edgar branch, and then the following evening at 6 in Athens. And then over the next several weeks, they'll be moving to all the branch libraries. And it's all being done by the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy. This is an organization housed on the UW-Marathon County campus. Bring your opinions about immigration, whatever they are, and whatever your perspective, because these opinions will be compiled. There will be a report at the end of the series of town hall meetings, and the information will be forwarded to our state legislators. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. Our guests are Jim Veninga and Eric Giordano. We want to hear from you. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
You get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life. Why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation Science Friday. You can hear it tomorrow at 1 and 2 o'clock right here on the Ideas Network. How in the world, and let's just be practical about this, we have, what, 12 million illegal immigrants? First of all, how did we come up with that figure? How do we know, since they're illegal and undocumented, how do we come up with the documentation for the number 12 million?
Yeah, I think that's an estimate. I don't think anyone claims it's anything more or less than that. Some have claimed it's more. Some have claimed it's less. I think people, you know, we have a census, but, of course, we don't know how accurate that is, because many of the people who we're trying to count, of course, if they're undocumented or illegal, don't want to be counted or not, and are not found. So, but I think that's based on some informal or I would say more scholarly type community studies that have been done and extrapolated on a national level.
There's another figure, too, that's thrown out a great deal, and that is approximately, if I remember right, 1.2 million immigrants a year arrive in the United States, of whom 300,000 are estimated to be undocumented or entering illegally.
Right, and that's, I believe, since 2000, that figure, about 1.2 million. since the year 2000.
How do you possibly round all of these people up and send them home?
Well, that's one of the big reasons why the debate is so complex and the issue is so complex. And you mentioned earlier, you know, it seems the Republicans are addressing this more than the Democrats, but let's remember that the Republicans themselves have been split on this issue, and they were split in particular on this issue of what to do with the ones who are currently here.
I find it interesting, and Eric, you might want to point this out, you know, comment on this as a political scientist, that John McCain, who took an awful lot of hits for his position on immigration, supporting the president's idea that some form of a process has to be in effect for us to take the people who are here and find a way to make them legal residents, if that's at all possible. He was, you know, attacked, vilified, criticized, and now suddenly he's the front runner for the Republican race.
Well, he's the front runner, but he is still the candidate who is known as the reform candidate in the Republican Party. And so those who are voting in the polls, for example, in Florida, who really support a more hard line towards immigration and illegal immigration, they have tended to support Romney or Huckabee on that issue. And McCain is someone that they are a little wary of because of some of those views. But on a national level, there are many people who feel strongly that there does need to be some kind of reform plan in place. So that's probably reflecting that as well.
Realistically, can you call it amnesty? And I know there are people who do, but can you call it amnesty if you make people pay a fine, you make them go through, jump through all kinds of hoops to learn the language, take a citizenship? I mean, the very fact that you have to pay a fine and then wait in line,
it does seem very different than what happened back in 1986 in the Reagan administration, when there was legislation that did grant some 3 million undocumented individuals a path to citizenship. So I think the proposal now, don't you think, Eric, does seem to be quite different from what happened back in 1986.
And then another question is, how will this play out in the political race in November? The Hispanics are a large portion of the electorate. People on both sides have been trying to gather them in, under their wing, into their fold. It was a major push by Karl Rove and Republican strategists, and now it's all up for grabs. They seem to be leaning as a group toward the Democrats, if for no other reason than there's less harsh rhetoric on that side of the aisle.
Well, you raise a great point. Of course, we can't lump all Hispanics into one voting block. We know, for example, obviously Cuban Americans tend to vote Republican for different reasons. But yeah, I think for the most part, the Democrats and the Democratic Party have tended to resonate in terms of their policies towards immigration with those voters. But then again, as you mentioned, McCain from Arizona he speaks Spanish. He sometimes speaks in Spanish on the campaign trail and seems to be courting Spanish voters. I think he would be a very attractive candidate for the Hispanic community.
You know, our president, George W. Bush, who's a darling of conservatives, speaks Spanish on the campaign trail. It's one of the reasons he got elected.
Right. And you know, unfortunately for him, his reform policy didn't fly too well with other members of his party. So
this is a timely conversation for us to be having today, because tough new rules just went into effect today requiring proof of citizenship for anyone crossing both the Mexican border and the Canadian border. Apparently, there were some people expecting long lines and delays that didn't materialize.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are kind of small efforts that are being made to deal with this issue, but what's really come to the forefront is the need for extensive reform, major reform. And I think what we are going to try to hear about from citizens in this area is really, what is the shape of that reform package? What should it really look like?
And why are we just focusing on Mexico? We have traditionally viewed Canadians, I guess, as our close friends, an open border that's been a clear illustration of that understanding. What are we losing as a people if we take our neighbors to the north and treat them with suspicion?
Well, it's tough to treat anyone with suspicion and not have some kind of ramifications in terms of how we act and behave as a society. I think one of the issues, obviously, with Mexico is just sheer numbers. It's an issue of numbers. It's an issue of a different language and in cases, a different culture that we can visibly see springing up, especially in the West and the Southwest, and some that concerns some people.
You don't have hundreds of thousands of Canadians trying to move south of the border and work in our agricultural fields.
There's another group, too, that's of interest, and that has to do with political refugees. The number of political refugees globally has gone up dramatically, and yet the number entering into this country legally has, right, Eric, has gone down significantly.
Yeah, and I think this whole thing is really such a tough political issue, because we want to identify some people as political refugees and not others, and so that really is a matter for people to decide what they value here.
Well, we are traditionally a nation of immigrants, and there is a dichotomy of our traditional role as a melting pot and also the desire to control our borders. And again, this will all be discussed in a series of town hall meetings starting this Monday at 5 o'clock in Edgar at the Marathon County Branch Library. And then again in Athens, and then at all of the libraries in Marathon County. We do want to thank today's guests, Eric Giordano, director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and Jim Veninga of the Institute Advisory Board. Guys, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Glenn.
And thanks to today's on-air producer, Kelson Quisler, our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next week, 2 days after Super Tuesday and just a few days before the Wisconsin primary, the topic turns to presidential politics as we welcome John Smart of the Park Falls Democratic Party and former Republican State Senator Walter John Chilson to analyze the races in this most extraordinary of political years and to see how all of that will play out in the Badger State. Thanks for joining us. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 o'clock on the Ideas Network stations, WLBL, 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 AM Auburndale, Stevens Point, WHBM, 90.3 FM Park Falls, and now WHRM, 90.9 FM Wausau, High Definition Channel 2. Thanks for riding with us today. I'm Glenn Moberg. Until next week, we're heading out of town.